Testing. Dr. Kemp, can you hear me? Dr. Kemp, testing.
Good evening, Dr. Burke. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good evening. Welcome to another evening of Dr. Clipper and Friends, featuring absolutely the very best in all of women's sport and HBCU athletics. We want to say this. Welcome to our team tonight. We have Steve, we have Marla, we're missing Joelle, we're missing Jeff, we're missing Terry, but they will be back with us next week. And we want to say Happy Women's Month. It's our last week of the month for Happy Women's Month to all of our women out there. Let's have a moment of silence, 10 seconds, for Haiti and also for Baltimore. All righty. Good evening. So we are Dr. Clipper and Friends, featuring absolute very best in all of women's sports and HBCU athletics. We're talking a little bit of world news tonight. First of all, situation in Haiti. As many of you heard, there's a major unrest in parts of Haiti. They're taken over by gangs. There's problems with food supply. The water is becoming unsanitary and several things. So we want to pray for Haiti. And then what happened in Baltimore, where a barge ship hit the Scott Bridge, collapsed, and at this time, I understand there's still 5 to 6 construction workers that are missing. We want to continue to keep both in our prayers. Dr. Kemp, talk to me about what's going on on Haiti.
Yes, Dr. Burke. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for listening in. Glad to have you here. It's just really sad just to see the unrest and what's going on over there, you know, in their country, in the country of Haiti. And, you know, people, they can't get out or find, you know, safety. According to the news reports, gangs are taking over and just pretty much just trying to control, you know, the country and just trying to take over and do what they can to, you know, take control of the country of Haiti. So definitely our prayers are with them that they find some type of rest or peace.
All righty. And Steve, your thoughts on Haiti?
My, you know, my heart goes out to them because I couldn't imagine, and you have to put yourself in their place. I couldn't imagine being over here having to go through that. And just to see what's going on over there, that it's heartbreaking. And and this has happened there before. And I guess if you don't learn anything from the first time, it will repeat itself. And I just pray that everything over there will settle down and get some kind of semblance of peace and coming together over there.
Absolutely. And then, so Steve, we'll continue to pray for the situation over in Haiti. Now, a follow-up to a situation that we spoke about last week in Mississippi. 6 officers who tortured 2 black men for approximately 2 hours in January of 2023 have all been sentenced. The shortest sentence, 10 years, the longest sentence, 40. And they are heading to federal prison. And we still know that there's the other case of the local police officers in Memphis that happened in the same month, January of 2023. And that case is still ongoing. But Dr. Kemp, give me your thoughts on the situation of the officers in Mississippi and their sentencing.
You know, Dr. Bird and Steve, I'm just so glad that, you know, this story came to the forefront and they were able to, you know, actually a judge actually sentenced them to the amount of time that these ex-officers actually received just for torturing and just doing what they did to these young men. And interesting enough that this story was not even brought to the forefront, whereas, of course, the Memphis story with the officers, ex-officers there were caught on tape. So we were able to, that story was able to be captured. Whereas this one, just glad that it was able to be brought to the forefront, and they pretty much got what they deserve, and probably should have gotten a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Within the guidelines, though, that's what the judge did. Steve, it happened in Rankin, Mississippi. Give us your thoughts on this case, Steve, the sentencing of those officers, and now that it's over.
Well, like Dr. Kemp said, I'm glad it came to the forefront because, you know, you would think after George Floyd that, you know, we would have gotten a little better, and it didn't. And it kept happening. And finally, like you said, this judge sentenced them, which they could have gotten more. But hopefully you know that you're going to have to pay for crimes against minorities, especially us as Black folks, because how many peaceful, more peaceful protests are we going to have? They don't work. Peace, they don't understand peace. So when you don't understand peace, you know, something's going to have to happen to let people know that this cannot go on. And you know what happened to the guy that killed George Floyd? He was stabbed about 22 times in prison and put right back as soon as he healed up. And, you know, stuff like this is going to have to happen. We cannot keep having to go through this. And it was like, you know, we going back to the days, they hated when Billie Holiday sang that song Strange Fruit because it was the truth. Well, we can't go through that now in 2024. You know, it's a different type of lynching now. So hopefully this sends a strong message.
Yeah. This may be the first time I can remember, at least publicly, Steve, in Mississippi, that police officers, federal or state, and let me add, these guys also still face state charges for which they have pleaded guilty. But it's the first time I've heard in my lifetime in Mississippi that policemen are going to jail for anything against African Americans. How about you, Steve?
I'm sure it is. I am sure it is. Like you said, in Mississippi, yeah, I'm sure it is. And like you said, hopefully it can stop happening, or if it doesn't, that the punishment is going to have to fit the crime. Yeah. It's going to have to. But in Mississippi, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to get Jim to come on in here. Jim, give us your thoughts on the sentencing of the first hello, Jim, from the Motor City, and your thoughts on the policeman being sentenced down in Mississippi.
Well, as Steve was saying, it took them, 40, 50 years to get Medgar Evers' murder convicted in Mississippi, Byron Della Beckwith. So this is a monumental thing that they're being tried, convicted, and being sentenced.
Yeah.
I'm happy for it.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Jim. All right. Let's move on. We have some tremendous birthdays in March. This is Women's Month. So we're going to start first. Let's look at the Queen of Soul. Her birthday is this month, the late Aretha Franklin. Oh, yeah. Aretha Franklin, March 25th, 1942. And of course, she passed August 16th, 2018. This American singer, songwriter, pianist, referred to as the Queen of Soul. Okay? Rolling Stone twice named her as the greatest singer of all time. And globally, she had over 75 million records sold in her lifetime. So many other awards. We're not even going to go into that. But I'm going to say, Dr. Kemp, give us your thoughts. Aretha Franklin, the late Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. Dr. Kemp? All right, I'm coming to you, Steve.
I was fortunate. My wife and I, several years ago, were fortunate to get to see her perform live at the Indiana Jazz Festival in Indianapolis. And she was, of course, older, but she could still sing. She sounded great. She I've got so many memories of her music and the times and what she sang about, you know, romance and love, and she poured her heart out in her music. The good times, the bad times, it all came out through her music, and just a great, great soulful singer. I mean, she was the queen of soul, like they said.
Oh, yeah. And she played a big part in the civil rights movement as well. Jim, give me your thoughts. Aretha Franklin, the queen of soul from Detroit there.
Started out with Detroit's own Aretha Franklin. Started out at New Bethel Baptist Church, where her father, C.L. Franklin, was a minister. And she had a career that spanned over 40 years. You said you don't see people last that long and be, and like you said, she's involved in the civil rights movement, but you just don't see people to last that long in the music era.
Yeah.
One of the greats.
The standard bearer, Aretha Franklin. Now, we had a second birthday. This guy, considered to be one of the greatest rappers and dancers of his time. His name, Stanley Kurt Burrell, born March 30th, 1962, better known as MC Hammer. Known for such hits as You Can't Touch This, Too Legit to Quit, Pumps to the Bump, and of course, those famous Hammer Pants. Everybody knows him, the MC, y'all. MC Hammer. Hammer time. Dr. Kendall, are you there? Dr. Kendall's still up there? Okay. Steve, MC Hammer.
I always respected Hammer. At that time, I wasn't a fan of rap music. And at 61, I am now. But at that time, I wasn't a fan of rap music, but I always respected Hammer for what he did for his group, the people he had with him, how responsible he was for the people he had on the road. And Cliff, one of our high school alumnus, was one of his dancers, was a great wrestler, and ended up being one of his dancers. But you know, he stuck to himself. He tried to come out of himself one time, and, you know, he realized that wasn't him. He didn't want a part of that. He was just, I think, an all-around good guy. And, you know, he was respected by a whole lot of people. They really didn't want to mess with him. When they did mess with him, a message was sent. So he had a whole lot of respect.
Yeah. MC. Nothing but the MC Hammer. Now, Jim, I'm going to come to you for the next one. This one, a lot of us don't know, but her birthday is actually today. Celebrity birthday. We call her the boss. She's 80 years old today. That is Miss Diana Ross. Oh, boy. The standard bearer. Jim, also, I think she's from Detroit.
Oh, yes.
Okay, give us the thought.
Diana Ross, a CAS graduate, Brewster Projects.
Yep.
Again, another person who from Detroit, but her career spanned eons. She went into acting as well. Did a lot of movies. Lady Sings the Blues.
Yeah.
One of the Wiz.
Yeah.
She is one of the best. And her daughter Tracy Ellis Ross, son Evan Ross, all are actors. Just a talented family.
Mm-hmm. So we'll give it up. We welcome our new session there, and we just wanted to honor Aretha Franklin, Diana Ross, and of course, MC Hammer, all with birthdays this month. And then there's one more, Jim. It's Detroit night, I guess. Not a birthday, but in March 20th, 1986, after being told she couldn't make it in the record industry, was the release of her first album, Rapture. That's right, Anita Baker, March 20th. 1986, she released that record. Boy, the rest is history. Give us something a little about Anita Baker, just about 30 seconds.
Okay, Anita Baker was a secretary, worked in a group called Chapter 8. Then she went solo, brought out that Rapture album that just brought her to the forefront. She does a lot in the community in terms of giving back. Just another, this is Detroit night. You got three great females to me.
We come and tell you tonight, Jim. Mm-hmm. Hey, some of the greats. for sure. Now, we want to say hello to Renee, also in the chat room tonight. And we have, we want to talk about our Woman of the Month. This is our last week with her. Minnie, Kobe Bryant, the late Kobe Bryant, named her the White Mamba. She's a superstar on the international circuit of basketball. She's on everybody's all list for the WNBA, still playing. And, of course, the two-time, I believe, national champions of the Huskies, none other than Ms. Diana Taurasi. Steve, give us some of the last comments. This is our last night with her, our Woman of the Month, the White Mamba, named by the Black Mamba, Kobe Bryant. Steve, Diana Taurasi.
Well, she's the one that got it all started at UConn with Geno and Taurasi and Rebecca Lobo. A lot of women looked up to Taurasi, the way she played the game, the way she carried herself out there on the floor. You could see the love of the game come out when she played. There was no doubt about it. And I think it was, you know, like I said last week, she was in her 40s and Jim reminded us that she was still playing and still alive. So that was a good thing. But yeah, she is a baller. She is man or woman, she's a baller. She really
is. Jim, Diana Taurasi.
Diana Taurasi, you know her record at UConn was 139 wins and 8 losses. Mm. And Cliff, you chipped there out of championship. You won 3 championships.
3 championships. Okay. Yeah.
Connecticut legend.
Yeah. All righty. Thanks so much, Jim. Now, let's turn to Ms. Morgan Cato, who is the vice president of the Phoenix Suns. She's the first African-American. She's our Woman Executive of the Month. And the Phoenix Suns are doing pretty good. So she's doing good at her job. She says she received a break in 2020 that was bigger than just her. She realized that she was breaking ground in positions in the NBA. She's been a great Women Executive of the Month. Steve, give us your thoughts one more time. Ms. Morgan Cato, Vice President of the Phoenix Suns. Yeah. Steve. Jim, give us your thoughts.
Well, you know, she not only worked in the NBA and the NBA offices in New York, she also worked with Fortune 500 companies such as Ernst & Young and Lehman Brothers prior to joining the league.
Yeah. And she was in that front office for quite a while before getting to the Phoenix Suns as well, Jim. I think about 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. So, and she had something also to do with the NBA being founded in Africa. Yeah. So she's played a big role. But Ms. Morgan Cato, we will keep our eye on you. Role model, for sure. Steve, are you there? Okay, tell us about Ms. Morgan Cato. Love you for a second.
Like you all said, she was in the office for 10 years before she got the big move. So not only did she have to pay her dues, and as a Black woman, do you know how smart you have to be? People who have done what she's done just amaze me because of how smart you have to be and how well versed you have to be, you know, with everything. So, you know, it's just my hat's off to her. She's just an amazing woman.
Yeah. And since she's over the budget of operations as well, $120 million budget. That's nothing to laugh at. All right. But now, here we go. We'll talk about some spring sports, and then we'll get to March Madness, okay? So, in the SWAC Conference, women's softball, you have the following. Florida A&M, 8-1 conference play. Bethune-Cookman, 8-1. Jackson State, 5-3. Alabama State, 5-4. Alabama A&M, 0-8. And Mississippi Valley State, 0-9. That's what makes up the East, making up the West. Prairie View 8-0, Texas Southern 4-2, Arkansas Pine Bluff 3-2, Southern 5-4, Grambling 2-6, and Alcorn State is 0-8. Those are the conference records. Most teams have played an overall 26 games by now, so we don't want to ignore all of our spring sports during March Madness. Now, let's go to the MEAC softball. Howard University 5-1, Coppin State 5-1, Morgan State 4-2, North Carolina T 4-2, South Carolina 2-4, Maryland Eastern Shore 1-4, Delaware State 1-5, and Norfolk State 1-5. So, softball, Jim, talk to us about softball, because this is a sport that's becoming much more popular, and all of our conferences don't have softball yet. And baseball, but these are the MEAC and the SWAC getting after it. What are your thoughts, Jim?
You know, softball is a sport that I've coached, a very up and coming sport, very sport that a lot of us can play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different from the slow pitch softball game that you see all the time, because you steal bases in softball, you hit the ball at some speeds of over 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. So it is a very up-and-coming sport.
Yeah, and it's a way that kids get their way paid to college. Everybody looks at basketball, track and field, volleyball. Dr. Kemp, your thoughts on softball? We've covered the SWAC, and we've covered the MEAC so far. What are your thoughts?
I'm glad that we actually covering the sport, and I'm excited just to actually see what the college teams will do. They always make it exciting, you know, just to once the sports come around in the spring, they actually get more people watching than in some of the other sports that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you're right, Dr. Kemp. One of those spring sports, and their championship action is May 30th through June 6th and 7th this year in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. But these are the top 10 teams in Division I. The University of Oklahoma have their 71-game winning streak snapped at the beginning of the season. But they're number one in the country now. They're 31-1 overall. Texas, 28-3. Georgia, 27-1. Tennessee, 25-4. Duke, 26-3. Stanford, 25-5. LSU, 25-4. Washington, 20-25. Florida, 29-4. And Oklahoma State, 26-5. So they help round out the top. The top 10 in Division I. All righty, let's give them a hand. All right, we're going to take a minute break, and then we're going to come back, and we'll start talking a little bit about March Madness. All righty, we'll be right back. All righty. All righty, welcome back. Dr. Clifford Friends featuring the absolute very best in all of women's sports and HBCU athletics. Now, one conference in Division I, HBCU, has baseball, and that is the SWAC, okay? The MEAC does not have baseball at this time. So these are the records in the SWAC in the East for the men. 5-0, Jackson State, Bethune Cookman 4-1, Florida A&M 4-2, Alabama State 2-3, Alabama A&M 1-5, Mississippi Valley State 0-4. These are the conference records. In the West, Southern 3-0, Grambling State 5-0, Prairie View 4-2, Texas Southern 2-1, Arkansas Pine Bluff 0-6, and Alcorn State. They are 0-5. Now, let's talk about our March Madness. Let's talk about first the NAIA, okay? In the NAIA right now, playing tonight, you have the men's and women's championships going on. In the women's division, you have Dort College out of Iowa, and they're playing Providence College. And that game can be found on ESPN3. News, in the men's division, you have Free Holloman out of Tennessee also playing tonight for the championship, and they're playing against Langston out of Oklahoma. Langston is an HBCU college, one of the four or five in the NAIA tournament in the men's division. They were an Elite Eight team last year. I think they're the only HBCU NAIA in the state of Oklahoma, but they are playing for the championship, and I just think that's phenomenal. Jim, let's talk about that. Langston playing for the national championship right now. Jim?
Well, Langston was, I believe, 34-1. Mm-hmm. They were number one seed in their region. They won their region. They won their semifinal game. They also were the only school, HBCU school, that had both men's and women's team to make the NIA playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, give it up for Langston. They're doing it. They're doing it. They're doing it. Steve, give me your thoughts on Langston. We could have an HBCU NAIA champion tonight in the mixed division. Steve?
That would be awesome, man. I mean, you're talking about coming a long way. That would be awesome. I'm just hoping they can do it. I'm rooting for them. It would just say a whole lot. You're talking about an HBCU school to do this. That hadn't been done since Tennessee State, 57, yeah. 58, and 59. So that would be just awesome to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's going on right now. We'll pray that they can pull it out. Also, we want to congratulate all of our HBCU teams. We also have the coach from Rush College Women's on tonight. We're going to introduce him in about 10 minutes. And Eric Jackson. We have Philander Smith, Todd Day, and the men's division from the Gulf Coast. We had Tougaloo that went also from the Gulf Coast Athletic Conference. We had Fisk University, okay, and who also went. And so Coach Crawford and Victoria Crawford. And so all these coaches have done a great job and definitely be congratulated. Now, let's move to divisions. In Division III, we announced a few weeks ago, the national champions already crowned are the women from New York University, NYU. And in the men's division, it's Trine College, T-R-I-N. They are the champions in Division III, okay? Now, Division II, here we go. They're down to the Final Four. They'll be playing tomorrow night on one side of the bracket, Texas Women's versus Ferris State, and on the other San Marcos will be playing ship. We want to congratulate the ladies of the Broncos, Fayetteville State. They made it to the third round of this tournament, and we applaud the season. As school, they went to first. Now, in the men's division, they're also down to the Final Four. And so they have Nova Southeastern versus CSUSB. They're one semifinals. The others are going on right now. Minnesota State versus Ferris State. The winner of that will play the winner of West Texas and UNG. That will be the other semifinal game. That's going on now. And then that championship, excuse me, those semifinals will be played Thursday night, and the championship this coming Saturday night. So they have it. Division II wrapping up, and NAIA wrapping up. And of course, we know we're ready to get out to Division One. Yeah. We also want to acknowledge Diana, who has joined the show tonight. And also we have our other 10 Get Engaged listeners who have joined the show tonight. Now, let's go on. Let's talk about a few of our games. We're going to bring up all of our co-hosts in it. Let's talk about the tournament, the Division One. Uh-oh. We'll talk women, and then we'll talk men. So I'm going to come to you first, Steve. You tell me, what do you think? What do you think, Steve, is going on in the
women's tournament?
In the women's Division One.
I watched Iowa and West Virginia last night. They gave West Virginia gave Iowa a good run for that money, had a chance to win it, but at the end it was just too much Caitlin Clark for them. And then earlier that day I watched Tennessee's women play North Carolina State's women, and Tennessee was down 19 at halftime and came all the way back to tie the game, and they had their chances, and there was some missed calls and some missed opportunities, but they came all the way back. I know I cannot think of the girl's name that played for NC State that was really, really good. And of course, UConn won last night, and I know Gino was talking about, you know, he's got the best player in the nation in Paige Beckers, and you know, he's got an argument to that.
Yeah.
So does Juju. So does Juju. Juju and USC, Juju Watkins, they won last night. But South Carolina looks to be the team to beat. They're going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Kemp, give us your thoughts on the South Carolina Gamecocks. And by the way, Renee Dunn says, yes, West Virginia wasn't scared of Iowa. But give us your thoughts on Dawn Staley's team. Dr. Kemp.
Dr. Burke. Mm-hmm. And team. I tell you that South Carolina's team, I'm like Steve. I don't know who's going to beat them because they got some starters that's and off the bench. They are ready to play, and they are ready to win. Yeah. They are ready to win.
Yeah. They have a freshman star. Now, Steve, we talked about Juju and James. We talked about Juju Watkins, of course, Haldego at Notre Dame. But they have a player for Wiley who comes off the bench averaging 12. If she was on any other team in the country, we would also be naming her as the top freshman and maybe an All-American. She's a dynamite player. She's from Columbia, South Carolina. Jim, tell us what you think about that player, Phil Wiley.
Oh, she's a great player. But one thing Dawn Staley likes to do is to bring her players on slowly. Okay. The big girl played behind, you know, played off the bench for a year. For Wiley's going to be the next star they have. And, you know, South Carolina is going to be hard to beat, but I will say this. I would love to see them play against USC and Juju Watkins. Wow. And those three transfers that she's gotten from the Ivy Leagues that are playing at USC.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my championship hope game.
All righty. Thanks a lot. Steve, possible crash course collision with LSU and Iowa, I believe, in the same practice. What do you think?
I still think that LSU probably has a little too much for Iowa if they play. I think the athleticism and the defense will get to them. And when you got Angel Reese and the Johnson girl down.
Flauge.
You know that, you know, and then
in his medical background.
Oh, something was in the background here. Jim, LSU, we'll come back to Steve. Jim, LSU.
Yeah, I think LSU is going to have a little too much firepower because one thing I've seen about Iowa lately is Caitlin Clark looks like she has the weight of the world on her trying to win this title. Mm-hmm. And you saw how West Virginia was able to push him. I believe that, now that is, unless the coach messes it up, which he's prone to do by benching Haley Van Lith again. But I believe that LSU will have the firepower. And I believe they meet the Elite Eight. They both have to win a game this week, and then they would play in the Elite Eight. But that would be another good confrontation. But I got to give it to LSU with a little more firepower.
People to like
Steve, we lost you, so we got you back.
Yeah.
From the talent. What do you think about LSU? We got you back.
I think I'm along with Jim with that, with Haley Van Lith. And I think the athleticism, like I said, with Angel Reese and Flage, I think it'll be too much. They have guards, so I think it'll be probably too much for them.
Yeah, they've got two more girls in the starting line that can play.
Yeah, they do.
The one who transferred in, and then a freshman, Williams, who can shoot it too. So they've got some players beyond Angel and Flage for sure.
Yeah, the Williams girl can shoot it.
She can shoot it. She can shoot it. All right. Now, there's one other young lady, and Jim, you may have to help me out with this. She played for Syracuse. They got knocked out the other night by, I believe, UConn. We haven't talked about her, but she is actually the third leading scorer of all time. Had it not been for Caitlin Clark, she would be number two. And nobody's mentioned her name all year. Her name skips me. Fair. Thank you, Renee. Her name is Fair. She plays for Syracuse. She would be the second leading scorer of all time. And can you believe it, Dr. Kemp? Nobody has mentioned her name. She scored over 3,000-something points. Her name is Fair. Interesting, huh, Dr. Kemp?
Yeah, I actually heard her name the other day when I was watching that game. You're absolutely right. No one has mentioned her name at all. So Daisha Fair is her name.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll definitely be keeping our eyes on her.
Well, yeah, she's, I think her college career finished, so maybe we'll see her in the WNBA. But, you know, sorry we missed that. Let's talk about the men. Here we go. And Steve, I'm going to start with you. Give us some key games to look for next week in the men's division, March Madness.
Well,
Steve?
Well, we're down to the Sweet 16 now, but let's mention the elephant in the room. Kentucky lost to Oakland. Jim, I know you were glad of that. I was glad for Coach Campy. He's been there 40 years, and I think I was talking to Jim the other day. I didn't realize that they'd only been in D1 since 2009. And then Yale beat Auburn. And so we've already had some major upsets, and the athletic director was supposed to be talking to Calipari today about the direction the program's going in. But we've got games on Thursday. We've got in the West region, Clemson, a 6 seed, will be playing Arizona. Also in the West, we have Alabama, will be playing North Carolina. Alabama's a 4 seed. And Carolina was a one seed. Then in the East region tomorrow, we have San Diego State will be playing UConn, and Illinois will be playing Iowa State in the West region. Now, the Clemson, Arizona, I don't know how much time I have, Cliff.
Four minutes. Go ahead. Right.
You have to cut me off. Arizona. Should come out of that game against Clemson. They've played well in this tournament. They're just going to have to get consistent point guard play from Boswell for Arizona to continue. But if not, they do have Jaden Bradley, who they played off the bench. I'm glad for Clemson because they got hosed last year and should have made the tournament, and they didn't. And I look at the UConn and San Diego State game. UConn's just got too much. There's a rematch from last year's championship game. UConn is strong. They're 9 deep. They've got 5 people scoring in double figures. Nobody has figured out the weakness they had last year, which was actually point guard, but they've got a freshman this year
that can play. And I just don't think that San Diego will be able to keep up with them offensively. Then we've got Alabama and North Carolina. One thing about Alabama that I do like, missed shots do not bother them. A bad stretch doesn't worry them. The pace is the thing. That they have depth. They have athletic.
We don't get to learn in school.
Yeah.
Not us, not people of color. We don't.
Coach Wright's going in, going out on this, but on the in the tournament, Jim, who do you have as the favorite in your mind? Do you think North Carolina can win it, or do you think it's UConn? Who's your favorite, Jim?
Well, in one of my brackets, I had Illinois winning. Another bracket, I had Houston winning. I really like that Houston team. That Houston team plays, you couldn't tell it by the game on Sunday, the winning double overtime. They play good defense and they got some shooters.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for Houston or Illinois on the other side.
All righty. Dr. Kemp, in the men's division, tell us what you think, and we'll see if we can get Steve back in to close us up here. Dr. Kemp, what do you think about the men's division?
I like UConn. I'm with Jim. I like UConn and Houston. I think they may be definitely in the Final Four. I was actually surprised that Iowa State, not taking anything away from them, but I was surprised that they're still hanging in there. And Gonzaga is still in it, right? Because I just threw my bracket. I didn't even try to fill out the bracket because I just, said, wow. But Cinderella is going to come on into the building anyway. So
right. Let's see if we can bring Steve back in here. Yeah. No one's mentioned Purdue with Zach Edey. But Steve, let's see if we get you back in. Steve?
Yeah, I'm back. One thing about Purdue, they know who they are. Zach Edey is going to touch the ball every time down the floor. They can't be beat. Gonzaga's going to pull Edey away from the basket, and I know that Matt Painter's not going to change what they do on defense, so it'll give Gonzaga a chance to win it. But Purdue is pretty strong, so I'm going to have to stick with Purdue, and the Illinois Iowa State game ought to be a great game. I think Iowa State will pull it out, even though Illinois has the team to beat them. Iowa State has the second best on-ball defensive team that I've seen this year outside of Houston. And Houston's got a good team. They're going to have to score consistently. They had three players that scored well for them the other day. They're going to need that. NC State and Marquette, I'm picking Marquette to win that one. Duke, of course, is playing Houston. I'm going to go with Houston. But it's not going to be the blowout that people think that it's going to be. Creighton in Tennessee. Creighton is going to have too much offensive firepower.
Okay.
They're just too much firepower. And I think what I have, my Final Four, I've got UConn, Houston, and Purdue. Begrudgingly, I have Purdue. Because, and I'm telling you what, if it's two coaches can mess you up, it's Arizona and Purdue.
All right, Steve. Thanks so much. We'll bring the NBA back next week. We're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to come back with Coach Eric Jackson. All righty. All right. Welcome back to Dr. Cliff Burton, friends, featuring the absolute very best in all the women's sports and HBCU athletics. We have 21 engaged listeners. We have another 9 in the box. And we want to introduce, he's the Associate Athletic Director and Head Women's Basketball Coach of Rush College in Holly Springs, Mississippi, Coach Eric Jackson Jr. And this is from a few years ago, entering his 7th collegiate season and 4th year at his alma mater, Rush College. And while at Rush, he had a record of 59-26, currently at that time, and 117-56 overall. And his teams finished at ranked 23rd in the nation during the 2019 and 2020 season. He has gone on to win the last 3 Gulf Coast Athletic Conference Championships. Some more on Coach Jackson. He produced a player of the year, GCA Player of the Year in 2020. And at the end of the 2020 season, he received the GCAC Coach of the Year, finishing with a historical record of 25-6 after being picked finished 6th out of 8 teams at that time in the Gulf Coast Athletic Conference. He also coached at Westside High School, and he has a 2-year stint there. He coached girls varsity basketball. When he went there, the team was 2-20. But by the end of his first year, he was 12-10. He took over a team that was 2-20. He also had stops in Florida. He had Concordia College in Alabama, and he's been successful everywhere he's gone. He also helped produce a USCAA Division I national championship team as well. Let's please welcome to the show Coach Eric Jackson, 3-time defending champion from Rush College in Holly Springs, Mississippi. Coach, how you doing? Are you there? I'm getting to come in. Coach, are you there? So we have some difficulty. Dr. Kemp worked with him there. But Coach Jackson is, okay, he has to unmute himself, okay, because he's not muted. Coach has to unmute himself working with Dr. Kemp, okay, because he's not muted. All right. So Coach Jackson has had an outstanding career at Rush College. Again, as I said, he's the 3-time champion. This year's team has gone to the NAIA. He's also a member of the NAIA selection committee. And so he helps put the tournament together. We want to talk to him about that. He was born here in Paterson, New Jersey, but as a youngster, he moved to Holly Springs, Mississippi. And he also went on to play on a state championship team. Let's see. Coach Jackson, are you there? You're still working on getting him unmuted. Okay. Jim, tell us your thoughts. You've watched the team play. Hello. I've watched the team play. Okay, Coach, are you there?
I'm here now.
Oh, wonderful. All right, we got you through. How you doing, Coach?
Man, I'm doing good, man. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we are wonderful, and thank you so much for coming on our show. It's nothing but an honor. One thing I left out of your introduction, Coach, I think I know why you're so smart. Coach also graduated from Rush with a degree in mathematics. Come on, y'all. So, Coach, give us your version of how early playing days, because you migrated south, I understand, from Paterson, New Jersey, and then how you got into basketball as a player and then into as a coach and as a girls' coach, a women's coach.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I graduated from Rust, I just wanted to be around the game. I knew I wasn't tall enough or fast enough or jump high enough to continue to play after college. So I decided I wanted to be a coach, and I kind of liked math. So I was like, okay, well, how can I leverage my math skills to continue to be around the game? And so I think the best way to do that was to, be a math teacher. And so what I wanted to do initially was, just be anybody's, JV coach, at a high school somewhere and teach math and kind of leverage that as like, hey, I'll teach math if you let me be around the game. And at the time, I was in Selma, Alabama at the time, looking for work like a recent graduate normally does. And all of a sudden, the job at Concordia College came open maybe about 2 weeks before the first game. And you know, I applied, and you know, the president at the time, he needed a coach and I needed a job, and it just made sense. And so he hired me, you know, but I wasn't crazy. I knew I needed to do a good job to keep it, because I was just going to be a bridge coach if I didn't. And, you know, I learned so much that first year, kind of trial by fire, trial by error, whatever you want to call it. And the rest is history.
Wow. So, Coach, let me ask you this in coaching, because you've been in the Gulf Coast Conference, soon to be HBCU Athletic Conference in July, but you've been in this conference for what, 5, 6, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years now?
I just finished my seventh season. Our first year, well, I've been in the GCAC six. Our first year as an NAI institution, we were independent. So we weren't in the GCAC, but the year after that was our first year. So we've been in the GCAC for six seasons and NAI for seven.
Okay. And so you're seeing the growth of this conference over the last three or four since Dr. Kiki Baker-Barr, 3 years. What are your thoughts on that? And it's growing some more next year, right? It's 10 now going to 13. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the growth of the conference as far as the competition, how it makes you better for national competition and overall all the teams? What are your thoughts?
You know, first of all, to answer your first question, I just think that the leadership got it right. You know, I think that, you know, we was in a situation when I first got in, we were in a transitional period in terms of trying to get a new commissioner, because the commissioner that was there when I first got in the league, he left. And so during that transition, you know, Dr. Barnes decided to kind of be that bridge while she was athletic director at Dillard University at the same time. And, you know, the conference was not growing, you know, and yeah. So the leadership decided to say, you know what, let's get a full-time commissioner. And then they just picked the best one they can get in Dr. Yeah. Barnes, and she is phenomenal. And so I think that's the best thing the conference has ever done. And, you know, because we were on the we was on the verge of not being a conference, just being honest. And, mm-hmm. you know, to see the growth now and see the potential and where we are now, 2 years ago, if you told me this, I would have thought you would have been crazy. You know, that's just a testament to her and her work and her team and everybody else around her, just giving her the resources that she needs to be successful. And we're just grateful for that.
Yeah, yeah. We actually interviewed her. I met her about 3 months before she was going to start as the Gulf Coast Commissioner. And she was one of the first interviews we had on the show, but she's a visionary for sure.
No doubt.
So now, I want to ask you this, and then I'm going to open it up for our staff here, Jane, Steve, Dr. Kim. You also do administration with the NAIA. Selection committee. Mm-hmm. Tell us how that goes. Like, everybody sees the NCAA, right? D1. But what goes into NAIA, how they see, and then how they go about the first round, where teams will play? How does that work?
Man, it is a very sophisticated algorithm web type of thing, man. There's so many different lenses and scopes you got to look at through that thing. And I still don't fully understand it, but I wouldn't have understood it without actually being in that room. You know, it's so many different things that they got to make, decisions they have to make. People deciding who plays who. If they play this team, it may cost the NAI, you know, tens of thousands of dollars just for that one mm-hmm. game to happen, or just for that one mm-hmm. team to travel to a certain place. And so, you know, and sometimes, you know, when we're on the outside looking in, we're like, man, why does this team got to go all the way over here? And why this team got to go over there? And it's like, man, if you saw how it was at the beginning, you would appreciate the work. That's what I was saying. But it is, you know, I'm in there with a great group. A diverse group from all over the country, man. And we work hard, and it's just a great atmosphere to see a lot of people from all over the country that want to grow the game, different ages and backgrounds and things of that nature. And so it was just a really, really great and humbling experience to first of all be chosen to be a part of that, for one.
Congratulations.
It was great. It was great, man. And it was just really, really cool. So it's something to be said. So I wonder how hard it is at the NCAA level as well, not being in that room. So but it was really, really cool to be a part of.
Well, congratulations. We're proud of you, Coach, being from the conference. You know, I'm going to open it up, start with Dr. Kemp, and ask you about your team and all those good things. Dr. Kemp, question for Coach Jackson.
Sure. Good evening, Coach Jackson. Glad that you were able to make it on the show, and congratulations to you and your team.
Thank you.
I had to put in the chat. I said they had Coach Jackson using his math skills in the room.
Oh, I see it.
You have to go back to some of the math formulas.
You got to.
I think it's great. My question is, how do you balance your roles as the associate athletic director and as the head women's basketball coach? And then how do you keep your student athletes balanced as well throughout the season on and off, during the on and off season?
Well, to balance the administrative work, you just got to get it done. You know, being at a small HBCU, you know, most people that work here don't do one thing. You know, you got multiple jobs. Mm-hmm. And my job is just, you know, to help with the administrative work. Probably because as far as the coaching staff is concerned, I'm probably the longest tenured coach here as of right now. And so I kind of know the intricacies and the things that need to happen and what needs to get fixed first, because it's been a long time or whatever the case may be, in terms of having to have that insight. And so just being at meetings and, you know, and stuff like that is really cool. And it kind of also helps my program as well, because, you know, stuff that we see as a basketball program that needs to happen, or, you know, some things that we need to improve on or things that we want to keep that were really good. I get a chance to be in that room and have a voice about, hey, let's not get rid of this. This was really good, you know. And so so that's really, really cool. I mean, and then, you know, with my team, you know, my recruiting strategy is a little different. You know, I recruit a lot of transfers. And and so what happens with that is I also look at their grades to make sure that they can, you know, for one, deal with college life and manage their time the correct way to make sure they have the grades that are acceptable for our program, but also being able to navigate the distractions and the excitement of being a part of an HBCU campus as well. Because, you know, we can say and do whatever, but the reality is we can't watch them 24/7. We can give them a framework, and we say, hey, you got study hall here and here. But eventually they're going to have to, you know, rest on their own upbringing and their own values and their own character. And we just try our best to make sure that we have the right pieces to do that. And one of the things that we tell them at the beginning of the year is, you know, you want to come here, and our goal is to always win a national championship. But, you know, a championship – it's not a goal, it's a lifestyle. So you got to attack everything in your life in a championship way, you know. And so we can't always talk about what that looks like and kind of get down to the details of what does that look like with your teachers? What does that look like with your relationship with, you know, your parents, with your faith, with your teammates, with your coaches? And so that way, by the time they get to me in basketball, it's already kind of set, you know. And my returners do a really good job of making sure that, hey, when I'm not there in the locker room, like, hey, this ain't gonna fly, you know, because we have a certain level of expectation, and they do it in a good way. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that helps us balance those things for sure.
Wonderful. I'm gonna come to Steve next, but Coach, I wanna ask you a question. Has the NIL deals or this transfer portal affected your program, or do you see it affected NAIA as much as it affects NCAA Division I and some Division IIs?
NIL deals, not as much. I mean, you can possibly recruit an influencer. I know a friend of mine had a set of twins that were really well-known on the social media platforms, and so they kind of came in with that, and so they kind of had to be – you know, that had to be known, and, you know, some boundaries had to be set, but you had to still let them, you know, do what they've been doing. And but as far as the portal, I think that it helps us as an NAI institution, because we get an opportunity, because everybody that gets in the portal from a Division I school is not going to go back Division I, like, because you still have the JUCO kids that are coming out, and you still have the high school kids that are coming out. And so everybody's not going to get that second or third chance to play Division I ball. And so, you know, as NAI coach, we just try to be diligent and just be in that race. And so hopefully we can get a steal here and a steal there. And, you know, just like a great value version of a Caitlin Clark, you only need one player to give yourself a chance. Yeah. If you get two or three, you really, really got a chance. And so that scale of what that quote-unquote player looks like at the NAI level is different than what it is in the NCAA. So, you know, like the old adage says, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
All righty. I'm going to let Coach Steven Wright speak to you. Steve? Coach Jackson.
Coach, how you doing tonight?
And I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was reading up some things on you today, and when I saw that you were a math major, I was like, oh, my God, I had a flashback, because I was so terrible at math that I'll never forget when I had to take my college, my teacher's exam to get my teacher's certificate. Mm-hmm. Math was my holdback. So Dr. Burke tutored me for a couple of days, and I got enough from him to make educated guesses enough where I could get a high score in that math, and I got my teacher's certificate. So math is just I just wish that I got it. I had a tutor when I was at Fisk. I can't think of his name, Dr. Burke, and Jim. And he's passed away, and he was a great teacher, and he tutored me, and I would get it. It would be just as clear. So I said, well, look, can you sit with me when you give the test? You know, you get me started. You know, I can go from there. But as far as basketball, I love the transfer portal, and I love where you're headed. I'm a former coach, and if I was coaching in college now, I would just be eating that transfer portal up. I check the transfer portal every day as it is now. And like you said, everybody in that portal that's played Division I basketball is not going to go and play at another Division I school. They want an opportunity to shine. And I think the portal gives them a way to do that. And last thing, did you play against Monte Ellis?
Man, you know a funny story, man. It's so funny that you said that. So I played high school ball here in Holly Springs at Holly Springs High School under Nayland Hayes. And so I was a part of the back-to-back state championship teams here at Holly High. And that year when Monte was doing really well and he's about to go to the league, we had the number one team in the state, and Lanier, which was the school that Monte went to, had a number two team in the state. And it was crazy. Like, it was all this talk about, you know, supposed to play and all those different types of things. And what happened was it never happened. I think they was trying to play it in Jackson, and that's where Monte was from. And I think no, we ain't playing it in his home state. And we were just like, he was like, we're just going to leave it up to barbershop talk for 30 years, 40 years to come. And don't blemish our boys' record like that. And so we was mad at the time, but just going back and looking at it, I think, you know, he was just trying to protect the legacy that we've built. And because we haven't won one since then here at Holly High. We've gotten close, but it just kind of just, you know, just talks about how hard it is to even just do that. And to protect us. So we didn't get a chance to play, but that was always a good story in the barbershop to talk about what was happening in that game.
Well, you've had a couple of good players recently. Was it DaQuan Smith, who's at Radford, and Derek Fountain at LSU?
That's right.
Some good players, and I'm hoping Fountain hit the transfer portal
because he can play. I think he would have a chance somewhere else to get some more run, you know. But
let me bring Jim in here, because Jim was he came to the championship there in Tuscaloosa with myself. And let me just tell our audience, Coach, your teams, one, they're so well-conditioned, and they run well, they space well, they shoot well. We start live. So, Jim, I know you have some questions. Coach Jackson, or comments. Jim?
Well, Coach Jackson, I met you down in Stillman, but we talked about your math skills. We talked about your coaching skills, but we haven't talked about your dance skills yet.
MC Hammer.
I love to see you and your – I was actually looking at some pictures of you and your girl celebrating. One girl has the banner draped on. You know, I'll send that to you. And you just danced and had a good time.
Yes.
But, you know, I enjoyed it because all the athletes were well-mannered. Your girls were class personified. Athlete is done first class. And I know, you know, being in Mississippi, I know it's a hotbed for athletic talent.
True.
And I'm sure that you, because now, did you play against Kendrick Perkins?
No, but I did play against Al Jefferson.
Okay, see, those are three guys drafted right out of high school, right there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But, you know. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask, Coach. Quick question, because we were going to talk about it today. Antelope Valley, how did, in your view, with the selection committee, with them winning their conference but not really having a school to represent because the school closed down. Mm. Did that weigh on you anyway?
No, I think that the powers above the room, above the committee, I think they talked with the institution and got it to a point where they can continue to play. They didn't really go into detail with us in the room, but they just said that they won and they are playing, and we just took it at face value and continued to do what we were supposed to do.
Great. Coach, let's talk a little about the school, a little more, and how the students, Mississippi, how many students go there, and about what's the makeup, 3-1, 4-1, usually it's women, but how many students go to Rust College?
So right now, I think we're right around between 5 and 550 enrollment. It's been kind of down since COVID. You know, it's been trying to hard to bounce back just about like anybody else. Before COVID, we was like around 7 or 8. When I was in school, we were like at 12, you know, and so it's 1,200. So it was a little different environment. So I think the ratio is probably maybe 4 or 5 to 1 in favor of the women. But it's a small college, but we call it a big family. And the teachers know you by name. And, you know, one of the reasons, you know, you guys talking about the math degree, one of the reasons why I was able to pass those classes was because when we got to those 400, 300, 400 level classes and those comprehensive exams, I was in the same class with three other people. And it was just literally us four and the teacher.
Wow.
You know, and so,
there you go.
So it was that small class inside. Allowed me to get a degree, and it allowed me to get talk to my teachers, and we just had study groups. Like, we get out of class, we go get some pizza and figure it out how we're going to answer, you know, three math problems in these 2 hours that she's giving us to do it. We think it's going to take three.
All right. Come to James says, it sounds about like Fisk. But yeah, you've got some Fisk guys on here, Tennessee State on here as well. And but we also love Rust College, and boy, we love the way your teams play. I'm gonna come to Dr. Kemp. She usually has our last question. Dr. Kemp.
Yes, thanks, Dr. Burt. Coach, just wanted to ask. So, what? Where are you? Where do you normally get your recruits, your student athletes from? Are they from the state of Mississippi, or what other surrounding states do you are your students from, or your student athletes from?
So, you know, so I do recruit locally. I try my best to, but I don't lower my standards in the effort to do that because I know what we're trying to accomplish. Now, having said that, there is enough talent in North Mississippi to do whatever you want to do.
Wow.
The trick is to get them to stay, and the trick is to get them to stay before they go try the D1 route, because some of them, most of them can play at the Division I route, but, you know, and they want to go try that. And then the other thing is trying to wrestle a couple of those freshmen away from these 17 JUCOs in the state of Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
You know, and wow. so that's a hurdle, you know, because if I'm a junior college coach, I would say, why you go to a four-year that got a bunch of transfers there when you can come right in this year as a freshman and play against essentially the same kids you were playing against in high school? Because all of them going to junior colleges, they either a freshman or a sophomore, and it's the same kids. And that kind of – that would, if I was a high school kid, that would comfort me, you know, and say, you know, I'm going to play right away. I'm going to be able to do some things. And, yeah, let me go do that, you know. And so what happens is the kids that I like that are freshmen, most of them don't stay. The ones that did stay, they did a great job. My last kid that I had that came to me straight out of high school that, as a freshman that stayed, was Katie Blackman, and she's the all-time leading rebounder in Rust College history.
All right. Rebound
All-American, 1,000-point scorer, all kind of stuff. So, but it's the key of trying to get them to stay. And so what happens is, because the kids that want to stay, they can't help us. Our goals and their goals don't align. We kind of broaden out, and we just go all over the place. You know, we recruit all the JUCOs. We recruit all the kids in the portal. And then we just evaluate from there and try to fill the gaps that's needed. A lot of times at this level, you know, it's easier to get your kids in and then decide, you know, what kind of offense and stuff you're going to run, because you'll be better off just getting the best kids available and then figuring out once you get the kids. If you're at a bigger level, you'll have your pick of the litter, whether you want to run dribble drive or, you know, you want to run some high-low stuff or whatever. But at this level, one recruiting class, you may have a bunch of guards that can really, really drive it and handle it. The next recruiting class may be full of bigs, and those are the ones that want to come to you. So, you know, you got to kind of make a decision from there and kind of be fluid that way.
Mm-hmm. Coach, time has flown by too fast, but I do want to say, of course, anything else you want to say to us, we appreciate you taking the time out. We definitely appreciate you being an expanded bearer in the Gulf Coast. We love seeing your teams play. But anything you want to say to us? Because we have definitely time has gone by too fast here.
No, man, I just appreciate you guys for reaching out and giving us an opportunity just to speak on this platform, man. Thank you guys for creating this platform for us. You know, so I just, you know, give you guys a round of applause for that. Because everybody's not doing that, you know, and so we appreciate that. I say that for all of my coaches on the women's side, and especially on the ACC side, just to appreciate you guys, and we're going to continue to fight the good fight on our side.
Well, yeah, we're going to get the message out there, and actually we appreciate Dr. Barnes has made myself, Jim, in fact, all members of our team, official press members for the Gulf Coast now. Nice. So, yeah, we're going to have you and many more coaches back. We had Coach Spurgeon from volleyball, and we had a coach from Tugaloo last year. So we feel like we know. We know Gulf Coast really is our conference, or HBCU has a conference come July. But we want to thank you so much. Stay right there for a second, Coach. So
okay.
We have coming up in just a few weeks is Kimberly Meadows Clark. She's the president owner of the new HBCU Basketball Association starting this spring, and they will have their draft coming up, okay? A league that's started by professional league, HBCU men basketball players. So we'll see some more of that on the internet coming up. And then 2 weeks after that, in April, we're going to have a special on money. It's called The Blueprint by Dr. Troy Leavely. He speaks on money. It's a special edition on how we can do better with money, in particular in our communities. It's called The Blueprint, biblically based, but boy, he knows finances inside out. So you want to stay tuned. And so, Jim, I'm going to share a word about the Sheffield Show on Saturday morning, and then we'll get out of here.
Okay, we'll be, myself and Mark Jones will be on the Sheffield Show this Saturday, I believe 8 to 8:30. You know, go to on the, no, it's Look up Sheffield Show on YouTube and you'll be able to get it. I'm sorry.
That's right. All righty. Well, we want to thank everybody so much. Coach, we thank you so much. And we'll see everybody back in 168 hours from now. Again, thank you, everybody. All righty.